If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Daddy vs. Doctor. Here are your hosts, pediatrician Dr. Scott Cohen and comedian Sebastian Maniscalco.
All right, welcome to Daddy vs. Doctor. We haven't done this show in, I'm going to say, it's got to be over 2 months.
Yeah, it's long overdue.
Long overdue. I've been shooting a TV show. Dr. Scott obviously has been working at his pediatric business. And I got questions. As a parent, and I want to throw these out to you because your daughters mm-hmm. are older, yeah. obviously, than my kids, and I want to know how you deal with disappointment when your kids get disappointed. Now, give me an example. Serafina auditioned for Dorothy, and I guess when they audition, they pick three parts that they want to do.
Okay.
She picked Dorothy, the witch, and let's say the lion. She really wanted Dorothy. So they all sing the same song,
yep.
the Wizard of Oz song. And then from that song, they place the kids where they think they should go. Serafina got the witch.
Okay.
And yeah, but she really wanted Dorothy.
Right.
So, you know, she was excited, a witch. As the night waned, she started to get sad,
yeah,
and said she really wanted Dorothy.
Okay.
Have your kids went through disappointment in their life where they tried out for a team, mm-hmm. didn't make it, or they wanted a part, didn't get it? As a father, how do you tackle disappointment when your kids don't get something they want?
No, it's definitely happened. I mean, I think we try to discuss, like, it's a growing... It's a lesson, right? You try to do something, you're not going to always succeed the first time. You may not always get what you want, but that creates grit and drive and makes you want to work harder to get that next time. If everything was easy and you always got what you wanted, I think life actually would be harder, because when you're finally disappointed, you wouldn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. But I often wonder, like, when I hear you talk about that, because this just happened with my daughter also, Lexi, who's 12, and she... Last year was Belle in Beauty and the Beast, and we didn't know that she has this phenomenal singing voice. And she actually, I think I told you, you know, she'd practice behind closed doors. We didn't even know she could sing. And then the first time we ever heard her sing was the opening night, and it was just amazing. And now she's a seventh grader in junior high, and she's the low woman on the totem pole at her new school. And she just tried out for a new play called Descendants, and she wanted Mal or one of these lead characters. And we're listening to her sing, and, you know, oh, it sounds amazing. And she got Villager number 4. And I wonder, it's funny, because when I hear you talk about that, and I wonder if this happened to you, did it bother you more than it bothered her? Initially?
Initially, I was upset at the theater company.
Yeah. Right.
I
right, exactly.
I think the anger goes to whoever's making
the decisions.
But can you be, as a father, can you be objective
right.
when looking at your kid's talent and going, is it good or is it good right. because that's my daughter?
I want to think I can, but I wonder the parent side of things, because for that exact reason, I think when she came home and she told us, she surprisingly was actually, hey, got Villager number 4. It's great. She's with her friends. She's like, I'm seventh grader. Next year, hopefully I'll get one of the leads and moving on. Great. She said that she seemed very, you know, satisfied with it. I know she was probably disappointed. I was really upset. Like, I didn't sleep that night. I was like, but wait, she's got this amazing voice. How did she not get the lead? I've gone through this with Aubrey in soccer. You know, I feel like sometimes after games, if she doesn't score, and you don't score every time, like, I'm the one who internally is like really upset about the play, she's actually okay with it because she did the best that she could do. So I know it's hard because I want to say that I'm objective, but I feel like a lot of things my girls do when they don't succeed, I'm upset at maybe a third party for no reason. It's not the third party's fault, right?
Well, here. Do you convey your disappointment to your kids saying, "Why you didn't get the lead? What the f-?"
Yeah.
Or do you go, "Oh, Villager 4, how nice." I mean,
no, I actually, and sort of a hybrid. I was like, I'm actually surprised. I have to be honest, Lexi, I'm surprised. I think you have a beautiful voice. I think you deserve a big singing role, but I understand that sometimes you have to work up to that. It's, you know, we always talk about, you know, Michael Jordan didn't make his 10th grade basketball team, right? Mm-hmm. So you're not always going to get the lead. You're not always going to be the best at everything. And sometimes maybe you are one of the best and other people don't see it. And that's going to happen as well. But I think then you got to work for it. But that was great. You deserve Villager 4, great. It's sort of a hybrid because I do think she's very talented. I'm also her father, so I'm sure there's some, there's some bias there. But I was actually impressed by her maturity for that because I'm trying to think when I was a kid, if I didn't get anything, if I would have just been like, I don't want to do it.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You ever have that? Like, well, you auditioned and you didn't get something, and then you're just like, well, I'm not going to do it. And what if your child did that? Would you make them do it?
A lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
First and foremost, and I want to rewind before I get into those questions. Do you, as the parent, then go see who got the part, right?
With pickaxes standing outside their door?
Well, because that's the first question, yeah. I asked Lana, because I wasn't in the car when she went to get picked up. I said, who got Dorothy?
Right.
Right? And then I start to make or surmise my own scenario.
Right.
Because, and maybe people aren't ready to hear this, and I think we touched on this in another show, and we never aired it, but I'll present it to you. Do you think there is politics involved when choosing kids for things in school, yeah, whether it be theater? And I don't see this so much in athletics, right? Maybe you could speak to it more because my kids aren't in a team-oriented sport yet. Are kids making teams not based on their performance, but I'll throw an example out. Family donates a lot of money to the school. Does that open doors for the kids in activities where they would have no place being?
Yeah. I mean, I think at all levels, I think there's politics. I absolutely do. And I think that, you know, there's the politics of, I don't think you're going to have somebody who's absolutely no talent in a theater or a musical or sport then be the star, because it's going to look poorly upon whatever that institution is, or the coach, or the you know, the head of the company. But I think they're fit in. I think there are roles. I think there are politics also with grades. I think that as you get older, and you know, some of that makes sense, right? You're going to give the seniors a little more ability to do things. It's their last year. But then you got to ask yourself also, what is the philosophy of an institution? If you're going to tell people that, you know, let's say it's a sport, that we want to have the best team, we want to win, we want to show these girls you work really hard and do that, then you really shouldn't have politics in it, because you should, whether you are somebody young or somebody old, you pick the top players and you put them in, or you pick the people that are best in theater. But I get the, I think in, we see this in careers, right? Paying your dues a little bit. And it's really hard to be the hotshot coming in and getting the best part or best role, even in a job nowadays. Don't you find that?
I've always lived by the motto of, hey, if you're the most talented person,
yeah,
if you're the seventh grader coming into audition,
I agree.
You're blowing everybody out of the water, yeah, we give it to that person. And we don't give it to the senior that's half as talented because they're going to have one last shot at being the star, right, in the fucking
and,
thing.
And I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying that's what I see. But I agree. I think if it's soccer, even the at top the, 11.
Even at that level, at 14 years old, you're seeing that kids are playing that aren't supposed to be playing.
I think there's people who, you know, pay their dues and people get playing time. I do think that happens. And I agree with you. I've always been from the, you know, let's say it's soccer. Here's your 11 best and that's who plays. And yeah, you go up the score, you try to get other people in when you can. But the idea is to put together the best team you can. I'm sorry. That's what I believe. And I do believe it also teaches something to the kids. Like, if you're good enough to be in that group and work hard and do it and be talented enough to do it, that's great. And if you're not, you have a couple options, right? You either work harder to try to get to that point, or you pivot to something that maybe you're better at, right? We talk about that in work.
Yeah, I think nowadays, though, I'm just, again, going back to when I was playing soccer. There was a kid, and I think he might listen to some of my comedy. He's reached out to me before in the past that I went to junior high school with. His name was Danny Zimzak. Uh-huh. And Danny was terrible at playing soccer, but he had such a passion for it. He loved the game. The poor kid couldn't run. It was just, he couldn't run. He's just non-athletic, mm-hmm, right? You know, one of these kids that, like, he's, like, good at the flute.
Right.
But then you throw him in athletics and it's just like, guy, right, you know, the star quarterback ain't playing the flute. What the hell are you doing over here? Right. So Danny got in when the game was won. Basically, right, you know, we're up 7-0. Right.
Then you bring in the
throw
rest.
Danny.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. I don't think that's the case anymore. And again, I'm seeing this at such a small level with young kids. You could speak to this. Is there Danny Zimzak's
gets in earlier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're seeing that.
I see it at times, yeah. And I think it depends on the league, right? I think it's, there are definitely leagues for sports and different activities and schools that say right off the bat, the point of this is not to be the best in the country. The point of this is not to be a Broadway show. It's to have participation and everybody get involved and everybody be happy and, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think in those institutions especially, and they're all over, and especially in California, we see this a lot, then the point is participation and everybody's happy and everybody gets it. And then there are definitely leagues and areas where they say flat out, like, this is cutthroat and we're only playing these top people. And if you're not one of those, then you're not going to be it. And you're going to sit the bench and you're going to be upset. And do you want that? So I think a lot of places define that. I think a lot of schools tend to be more of the, we want to get as many people involved as possible and make everybody feel good.
Okay. That being said, and as long as we're on the topic of athletics and kids in sports, you're seeing, you know, thousands of kids between the ages of 1 and 18, but I want to segment it from like maybe 14 to 18, the high school years. Mm-hmm. Are these kids now, are they playing a plethora of different sports? Uh-huh. Are they in one sport and those parents now are like traveling? I talked to you, right? I go, where are you at?
I'm in a different place every week.
You're in San Diego. You're in Las Vegas. Serafina just made the gymnastics team, and they're telling us, oh, yeah, we do Arizona. Arizona. Yeah. She's six. We're going to go to Arizona.
Right, exactly. Like,
so when the kid's traveling to these different places, mm-hmm. are you like, as a parent, oh, we have to do this because she loves the game. There's more competition.
Right.
We get to see where she falls in a national level rather than just like a kind of a regional level. What is the, because we grew up, our traveling team, we went to the next town.
Right, exactly. Right?
We didn't have to go state to state.
Yeah.
My buddy Pat McGann does a great bit on this about traveling
baseball,
teams and
yeah,
baseball,
exactly.
What have you. So are you seeing a lot of pressure put on kids at a young age to perform at a high level when it's supposed to be or should have been just kind of fun and team oriented, participating in a team environment? I just want to know why it got so specialized that you need a coach now on the off season to get you ready for junior year.
Right.
Are you falling into this as a parent? Like, we got to get Aubrey a soccer coach.
No, I hope we're not falling into that pressure. I mean, so two things. The first thing you said about as they get older, I think they are compartmentalizing their sport. So I think early on people are playing a lot of sports, right? You just, every season you're playing a sport. And then I think it starts weeding down as you get older. And when you're in high school, if you're really interested in something, you love something, most of those kids are playing like one focus sport or one or two, right? Like something in the off season. But there's not a lot of time, like you said, to do multiple things. I mean, I think about soccer right now. She's 15, ninth grader soccer. She's doing 3 days a week, and then we have a tournament or a game every weekend. So we may be someplace on a Saturday and Sunday in California or elsewhere. I think there's a little gimmicky stuff in this, to your point. Like when we grew up, there was like one league, right? And basically you played all the teams around you and you were really happy. And now throughout the country, especially California, because they have a huge onslaught of different sports leagues, there's all these like different levels. I'm this level and I'm this level. A lot of people, what I found is they put their child in the level. It's almost like to say that I'm in this top level, but the competition isn't so much different. It's like, well, I could play the team here in my backyard. I could fly to New Jersey and play them. Why would I want to fly to New Jersey? You've probably seen on the internet all these memes now about travel sport. It's like, I'm going to pay $5,000 a year just to travel to New Jersey for the weekend to play a team that I probably could have just played there, under the guise of maybe it's a better experience, better competition. But I think especially where we live in California, which has one of the largest networks of sports, we have the competition here. So you don't necessarily have to go to all those places around the country. I think what it comes down to is your commitment, your coach, and the development. And that's really what it should be about. Because how many of these people are going to play in college? Very, very few. How many people are playing professional? Zero, right? So are they enjoying themselves, which I do think is important, even at the highest levels, because if they don't enjoy it, what the attitude you bring into the game is so, so important, and it makes you a better player. But the development and the coach you have, and we're really fortunate to have an amazing coach who's brought a group of girls together that enjoy it, but also play at the top level, because you don't want to be playing and putting in all this time, and to be honest, losing every week and not playing well, that's not fun either. So I think it's that combination that we found. And we've been doing a lot of, like, we have state cup and tournaments now, which is great because you go to those things to play sort of higher level teams throughout the state. So you do need to do that. It's sort of funny. All this club stuff that we're talking about has almost surpassed. I don't know, when you were in high school, for me, high school sports were the bigger deal than outside sports. Like to wear that varsity jacket and be on the varsity soccer team or football team, that was the big deal. Nowadays, actually, the more committed athletes, the outside sports are more important than the high school sports. It's flipped a little bit.
Yeah, no, it was great to be on the varsity team in high school. There was certain like cachet about it. But even back then, traveling soccer back in Chicago was the thing. I mean, Pegasus, green and white, these clubs that played these massive tournaments. And, you know, I think even Barcelona came, you know, like they were playing, you know, international teams. So I think you get like a lot more competition in these traveling sports than you would if you were just in the state. But yeah, as a father now, seeing my kids go through this this process of, I didn't get that, I wanted this. I just told Serafina, I said, listen, anybody could play Dorothy, all right? The reason you got the witch is nobody could play the witch you. Yeah. So I just kind of flipped it on her. But then, you know, when my wife and I went to bed that night, I go, hey, motherfucker, you know.
But don't you find, I mean, I live vicariously. I think all parents, we live vicariously through our kids in some sense, right? Any of the great things they do, any of the achievements they make, it sort of is like, yeah, that came from me, right? You feel good about it.
Yeah.
When your kid's a bozo, you feel like, oh my God, that came from my wife, you know? But you do, like, I don't know, when Aubrey scores a goal, it's somehow like I scored the goal. And it's so dumb. And like when Lexi's up on stage and I have no talent at all, it's like, that's my kid, you know? There is that as a parent, you feel their highs and you feel their lows. And I try, and I know sometimes I may even take it harder. Like I think at night, I think about these things too. And I sort of should let them just be, because I perseverate on a little bit. I think parents do.
But have you ever went and spoken to a coach or whoever's in control of the acting school or the musician, you know, whatever it is. Have you ever went, hey, like, if Aubrey don't make the team next year or she ain't playing, are you going to go up to the coach and go, come here, why isn't she in?
No.
Or do you just, you sit back and go, oh, I guess, you know, like, I would find it hard. Like, we were going to go up to the acting school and tell the acting school, you know, Serafina, in our opinion, has performed quite well over the last four plays with lesser roles. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm going to be completely transparent here. When I watch my daughter in comparison to the rest of the school,
you wonder why. She
pops.
Yeah.
Now, I could give it up to other kids. There's another kid I can't wait till she gets lines because she's got a personality. Right.
Tell.
I could tell.
Yeah. The interesting part about, you said, like, going up to the coaches, which is a hard one, because I never want to be that parent. You know, you see these parents like, my kid didn't play, like, every game going up. And usually those are the parents of the kids who shouldn't have played. Yeah. You know, they're right. So I don't want to do that. But I would have a hard time if I know my child deserved it over other people. The bigger issue is I just want to know, there has to be a reason. If you're not going to play somebody or somebody's not going to get a part, I think that if that person was asked, they should be able to come up with a good reason for that. And the reason why that's important is for the child to know how they can improve. We talk about this in jobs, right? If you just tell somebody they're fired but didn't tell them how to improve up until that point, you didn't give them an opportunity to improve their, you know, their job status. And it's the same thing with a child, and whether it's in academics, in sports, in theater, those instructors should be able to tell them, hey, this is what you're doing great, like we do in a job. These are the things you really need to work on to improve to get to where you want to be. It shouldn't be just a flat out, you're the best or you're the worst. Yeah, I think that's the more important
thing. No, an explanation is definitely in order. All right. So, little different spin here on Daddy versus Doctor. We don't normally take out the, you know, 26 minutes to talk, you know, shop like that. But you know what? This show is in its early years and we're trying to give it different looks. We got some different things we're going to do today. By the way, you might be asking yourself, wow, I've never really seen a marble table on a podcast. This is our new setting right here. In my home, we have designed a podcast studio where we are going to be doing, by the way, the soundproofing sucks in here. it's not all soundproof. We just had a helicopter fly over.
We haven't done Daddy vs. Doctor in 2 months because you were making this.
Yeah, we were.
You carved it. You went to Italy.
I whittled it out of
beautiful. Whittled the marble.
But this is gonna be our studio from now on. We were broadcasting from a studio downtown, which was a nightmare to get to. You live literally right down the street from here, so you can pop up at any time and we'll crack it out.
Sleep right next door.
We're gonna have guests in house shortly. We're not gonna be doing the Zoom anymore. It just seems to be a little bit antiquated. A COVID pandemic, if you will. Zoom.
We get to talk to people in person, yeah, which is really nice.
Which is gonna be nice.
Pop a quiz. It's amazing that we come up with these titles that are just, I mean, they're just so amazing. The audience should know that Pop a Quiz, we haven't seen these questions before, which puts us in a very vulnerable state, because usually the questions I ask Sebastian are like, what color is the sky? And then he asked me like, what is the mitochondrial DNA of something, which I don't know. So let's see how this goes.
All right, I'm going to ask the first question.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What is the smallest bone in the body?
Oh, that's a good one. I've actually asked kids this. I probably ask your daughter when she comes in.
If you get this, and I don't know where you got the answer. All right, because
actually, do you know? Do you even know where that is?
If it didn't say it on the card, I have no idea where it is. And number one, I would have thought the smallest bone in the body would be located in the finger.
Yeah, but it's the ear.
And it do you know?
What, there's three bones: the malleus, the incus, and the stapes.
Yep. It says the stapes here. It doesn't even give you the three. He knew more than Google.
And they are the three ossicles in the air, the smallest. And these questions are sort of fun because I do, when kids are interested in science and they come in the office, I'll ask them like, "What's your smallest bone? What's your biggest bone? How many bones do you have?" Things like that.
Okay. So okay. That, now, since we're on that topic. What is the largest bone? Maybe I know this.
What do you know?
Is the largest bone in the body the tibia?
No. But you know, because where's the tibia?
It's in the calf.
Right? But think about your thigh is much longer. So my guess is it's the femur, which is the bone from the hip to the knee. We can Google that, but my guess is that.
I don't think you have to Google it.
Yeah.
But here's an interesting, this is why I'm fascinated about intellect and education.
Yeah.
Out of all the bones in the body, right? And again, is that retention from college, or did you have somebody come in last week with a problem with their ear and you're like, is that refresher? How do you pull that out of your ass? It's unbelievable.
I just think I read it somewhere and you just remember things. I don't know.
Okay. Is it
human facts? I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting. That's not interesting. It's interesting.
It's interesting now, but if you ask me next week what it is.
What is the smallest bone?
All right, you give me one.
All right. Oh my gosh. Is this really?
We'll skip any either way.
No, I mean, who would know this?
well, you know what?
Wait. This is a question that was written for you. On average, how many bacteria cells are on each square centimeter of a rubber duck?
Okay. See, this game, let me just alter this game right now. When we do Papa Quiz next,
what is that?
What you got to do is I get the medical questions for him, right?
Right. His question should be, to me, stand up.
Who's starring in the next Black Adam, right?
Right. Right. So, which muscle are you If you do a 60-minute stand up back, which muscle are you most likely to strain?
Okay.
That's crazy.
I think it might be better if it's this segment should be called Stump the Doctor.
Oh, right. Stump the Doctor. And you're going to stump me.
And let me see what he knows.
All right. Oh my gosh.
Okay. At what age do children's brains reach 90% of their adult size?
I think it's 2 years old.
Six
years old?
It's 90%, right?
Yeah, 90%. Oh, that's high. All right, 90%, okay. That's high. That's interesting. Because, you know, we usually say that you're as smart as you're going to be at two, because your brain grows exponentially in the third trimester in utero, and then the first 2 years. That's why we talk about, like, full fats, omega-3 fatty acids, really good for brain growth, development, cognition. And then after two, we actually stop checking your head size, because you sort of level off after that.
The head size at two is the head
size? No, it's not your final head size, but we stop. You know how we measure the kid's head? We stop at two, because after two, when you look at head growth, it's almost like a flat line after that.
Okay,
We'll have to check that. Six years old, interesting. Who's our, do we have a medical correspondent looking these up? How do we know if this is right? Oh, well, yeah, we should have looked these up.
So we used Google, we used ChatGPT, and then we compared them against each other.
Because Google's great at medicine.
Wow.
That's the thing. That's what the hope was, that if we ask you a question, you're like, no.
That's interesting. 90%. 90% at six. All right, I like it. I'll give you a reason why I'm right, but who knows?
I'm going to give you another one.
All right.
What is the name of the condition in which an infant's head is flattened by too much back or crib time?
Yeah, plagiocephaly.
Wow.
Yeah. But that's a common one. So you know that when we...
Yeah, common.
No. When we were kids and we slept on our stomachs, everybody had nice round heads. It wasn't an issue. And now we've created, because of the back to sleep campaign, which is very necessary, which we put all babies to sleep on their back to prevent SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome. Okay. So when the babies are sleeping on the back of their heads, they flatten out the back because the weight of their head flattens there. And then if they like looking in one direction more than the other, right, you're laying down on your back and you always look this way, you flatten the right side. So it's all about forces, and your cranium is very malleable in the first year of life. So wherever you put the pressure, that's where it flattens out. So once, the worst it usually gets is the first 4 months of life, because the first 4 months you're flat on your back, then you start rolling. So then it starts evening out as your head grows. And that's where you see the kids with the helmets, right? So at 4 months, their head's really flat, and then they get a helmet that's like pressure point. So as the head grows, it puts pressure on certain areas, so it pops it out and it makes it round.
Okay. Let me address the helmet. Growing up, no one had a helmet.
Because we slept on our bellies.
Okay, but sleeping on your belly, you're saying, wasn't the right thing to do growing up.
Well, we found that it's a big risk factor for SIDS. So
and SIDS is smothering yourself in, like, just...
Yeah, it's sudden infant death syndrome, and there's a lot of factors. One of the factors, not 100%, because by putting everybody to sleep on their back didn't reduce it to zero, but that was a large factor. They think it's a combination of a couple things, that one, a position you're in, two, you have a genetic predisposition to it, and you're in sort of like, yes, a smothering position, and... you basically have, right, sudden infant death.
Gotcha. Okay, again.
All right, what you got?
Pediatrics comes from the word child in what language?
Latin. Greek. Is that right? Greek? Greek. All right. Greek. That would make sense. I went for origins, origin stories. Greek. That makes sense.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out if I have a question in regards to.
It's all Greek to me.
No, I don't.
What do you got?
Go ahead.
Yeah, so we got to get some. Right, how old's Mario?
What do you got?
All right.
I mean, there's...
All right, what?
Give me some credit.
Jesus. All right, let's give you something. Oh, look at that. What is the safest sleeping position for infants? There you go. Right. Now you know that one.
Barely. Almost forgot.
Yeah. So this one's wrong. But on average, when does the soft spot on a baby's head go away?
I'm going to say 1.5.
Oh, wow. Where'd you pull that one from?
Well, I was just going back to my kids, and I remember back, I go, oh, this is soft, and then it wasn't, and I'm like, oh, that was probably around. It was basically.
I like that you knew the answer, but when you pointed to where the soft spot was,
I went right here,
but it's actually right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
I went in the back.
Yeah. So 9 to 18 months is when it closes. So, you know, it's there. You're born with two, an anterior fontanelle here and a posterior. The posterior ones usually close at birth, but can close up to 3 months of age. The anterior fontanelle allows the different plates of the head to expand as your brain grows. So it's, you need it open, and then it closes somewhere between 9 and 18 months.
Yeah. All right.
So
wow.
Google is a little off on that one.
So I'm going to bring this up again. I know I've asked you this in the past, but now it's reached a point where we're coming on. Seraphina's turning 6.
Yep. You guys need an appointment, by the way.
Me hearing that, I get nervous.
Why?
Because the way you said it.
Yeah.
Was the way I took it is she was supposed to be checked for X disease.
No.
And it's past that point.
No. She does annual exams.
Okay.
Every year. Right. And you don't book in advance.
Okay.
And then it's hard to get an appointment.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, we could just do it right here. We'll just lay her up here on the table. We'll put some paper down.
This is how hard it is to get into his office. Right? He goes, listen, you don't book an appointment, right? And I might not be available for 2 months, right?
I'm not saying that, but I'm sort of saying that.
Okay, so she's turning 6 next week, in a week and a half, whatever. Party's next week. Still sucking the thumb.
Yeah.
Still pissing in her diaper at night.
I know. You get so worked up about the nighttime diaper.
I do, because we've tried, you know, we brought the light in. She's scared to go to the bathroom.
Right.
So now the whole room looks like space, right?
It's like the Luxor. Like,
lights on the ceiling, in the bathroom. I mean...
Oh, you got those lights, the little fairy lights?
Yeah, we light the thing up and look, you know, thing, and then the green stars. How much do we got to bring in to get this kid to get out of the diaper? I'm concerned. That's not gonna help
the diaper.
Well, I thought it would help her get not out be of scared bed. And go okay, in. Right. It's not dark.
But you really think she's wetting herself at night because she won't go up into the bathroom?
So we tried taking the diaper off.
Right.
We tried. Okay.
I told you not to do that.
Okay. We tried it.
Yes. And how many times did you have to throw away sheets?
Yeah.
Every morning. Exactly. Yeah. I could have told
well,
you.
Well, we put like a pad so it didn't burn through the sheet. Right. But and then we said, you know, stop drinking water at whatever, 5.
I'll give you a homework, and you're going to be able to do it for 2 nights. This is what you do. So we said up until 6, no interventions. You want to do intervention now. Because technically nocturnal enuresis, which is urinating at night, is considered normal up until 6. It's not that it's a problem after 6. It's just that it's so normal that we make no interventions because it's not going to make a difference. Like limiting fluid, telling her you're in big girl underwear, now you're going to stay dry. You saw it doesn't make a difference.
Mm.
So after 6, you can try some interventions we'll talk about. I will tell you, none of them are greater than a 50-50 shot, and they're more work on you, and you're not going to be able to do it.
Okay.
All right. Look at that vote of confidence. All right. So the first is you're doing easy, limiting fluid after dinner.
Mm-hmm. Fine.
Number 2, easy, pee before bed. Fine. Number 3, nighttime wakening. All right. So this is how it works. You put her to sleep, and then you try, you hope this works, before you go to sleep, you wake her up, and you go into the bathroom and have her go to the bathroom. Okay. If she stayed dry from that point till morning, every couple nights that she's dry, you're going to wake her up 15 minutes earlier, closer to where she goes to sleep. Okay. So let's say she goes down at 8 and at midnight you wake her up, and from midnight to 6 she's dry. for a couple nights, then 11:45, she's dry. Da, 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 da. What you're doing is you're training the bladder to hold the urine longer and longer. Okay. If that happened, that actually would be the greatest case scenario because it's no skin off your back, you're up. But that's not what's going to happen. You're going to wake her up at midnight before you go to sleep, and she's going to be wet in the morning. So you have to find the time that when you wake her up, she stays dry till the morning. It's probably going to be waking her up at 3 a.m. to stay dry to 6 a.m. So you're going to set your alarm every night at 3 a.m. to wake her up to stay dry at 6. And then if she stays dry for a couple nights, you're going to wake her up at 2:45 and then 2:30. And you're going to be miserable and she's going to be miserable. Lana's going to be dead asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And
we ain't doing
it takes
that.
Forever. Exactly.
We ain't doing that.
Exactly.
My point is,
yes.
A, how many times do you think she's going to the bathroom at night? Is it once? Is it twice? And can you pinpoint?
Put a tracker on.
Can you pinpoint when she goes to the bathroom?
Yeah.
And go, oh, she goes to sleep at 8. She's going at 11.
Right. No, it's hard. I mean, or unless you caught it. That's why, like, you would have to literally wake her up and see when you wake her up and she goes where she stays dry the next morning. So the basically waking up method, it works. It's just really hard. It takes a long time.
Yeah.
The other thing you could do, they make Bellin pads. At this age, this is a fun one. So it's a pad that goes on the bed. So when it gets wet, it rings. And guess what it does? It wakes up everybody in the house except the child in that bed, notoriously. Because bedtime wetters are also tend to be heavy sleepers. She a heavy sleeper?
Obviously, she's pissing in her pants.
So, yeah. So they're usually heavy sleepers. So I've literally had families who buy this alarm pad. You can get it anywhere. And the alarm goes off and every child, every adult in the house wakes up except the kid who's sitting in the wet. No, it vibrates and it does this thing. It's just funny how it works. So none of these things are great. If it doesn't bother her, I would put her in pull-ups every night and not worry about it until she's dry. But you can do it. These are the methods that
Based on what you just told me, I'm not doing any of what you just told me. It sounds awful. So we'll just have her in a diaper till 12.
When you wake up till 2 at 2 and do your security search of the property premises, you can wake her up. And Lana will be dead asleep. And you'll be like looking for raccoons.
And the thumb is just the thumb.
The thumb is impossible. I mean, at this age, the fact she you're going to go see my wife. Now, I wish there was a good way of saying
this. I don't even worry about the teeth because I know the teeth
are easy.
I'm worried about
her. Does she do it during the day too?
It's almost like a reflex where we'll be talking. She'll be doing something. Yeah. There'll be a lull and it's just automatic.
Right. No, it's like self-soothing and they're not even aware of it. That's why the nighttime's so hard because it's like no matter what you give them to distract them from their thumb, it's like that plus the thumb. During the day, I usually try to take their hand and distract them without making a negative experience. It is hard. I mean, nobody goes to college thumb sucking. Well, we saw that one person. She won't be that one.
She doesn't do it at school.
Maybe that's why she didn't get Dorothy.
Maybe.
Why don't you tell her that?
That's
cause issue. Yeah. You didn't get Dorothy because Dorothy doesn't suck her thumb. And then we cause like a full on neurosis.
Oh yeah. No, we're not doing that. Those are the two main things I'm trying to fix. And at a 6 year old appointment, what are you looking for? What are you looking at? Is there anything like, oh, we check for that, that, that at 6?
No, I mean, every year it's the general full body exam. What I get most out of it, 6 year appointments are great. And with Serafina, it's been like this for a while since she's probably like 4. But like you really can ignore the parents and have conversations with the kid. And you learn more about their development and what's going on. Just asking her questions about her day and asking her safety things. That's really what we're doing. It's crazy because in medicine, you spend all these years like learning about the body and the exam. And in the 30-minute visit I have with you, that takes a couple minutes of that time. The rest is really just talking and anticipatory guidance and safety and, you know, talking to the child. You can learn so much more. And of course, we're pinpointing other things, but.
Do you find it when doing an exam, let's say with a 6-year-old or what have you, Like, let's say if we brought Serafina in mm-hmm. and we said, go see Dr. Cohen, yeah. and we sat in a lobby.
Yeah.
And you did just a one-on-one with her. Mm-hmm. Have you done that? Like, with kids that just to see if they either tell you more, mm-hmm. if they're more, you know, not so reliant on the parents to explain mm-hmm. and they could articulate what they're going yeah. through?
No, I mean, starting at 3, when that child's up on the exam table, and you've seen this, I say hi, mom and dad, and I sit with them, I look at them, and the whole discussion is with them. I don't ask the parents any questions till the end.
Yeah.
And it's all up to the child. And of course, there are going to be parents that when I ask the child a question, like, you know, oh, what color is this? And the parent says red. No, I know you know the answer. You know, it's for them. It's not an IQ test. We're just like checking things out. But I love that. That's the best part of my job. I love the ages where I can sit with the child and talk to them. Most of the part, I mean, you know, we've always joked around. If parents didn't show up, I'd have the easiest job.
In yeah.
world. But it makes it fun. And I know your family, and I know Serafina and Caruso are absolutely fine. I've been with them enough that honestly, do you need to even come in for that? No, but it is important also that I do examine their body too.
This is one of my favorite parts of the show. It's called Daddy
Snack.
Snack.
You can always tell it's one of your favorite by just your general demeanor.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my level of excitement for anything ever.
Anything in my life. You're getting married.
So
I don't know these. Do you know these?
No. First time I've seen them. It's called Waffles. Waffles. Waffles.
Waffles Z. So first of all, somebody waffle. Obviously had the trademark on just waffles. So we got to change the S to a Z. Blueberry apple. What else we got? Blueberry apple.
Apple carrot.
Oh, apple carrot cinnamon.
Yeah.
With cocoa melon. So they're branded. Nice. And blueberry. Oh, you got this one.
Okay. So cocoa melon is a cartoon for mm-hmm. kids, right? What they yeah. did here. And again, you're always looking at the business angle on some of these products, right? We might have, by the end of this, our hope is to have Daddy versus Doctor snacks.
Yeah, of course. You
know, right.
Yeah.
Cocoa melon, popular cartoon.
What?
Based on this.
Don't you have to heat waffles?
Yeah, but this is.
You just eat these like.
Yeah, this is like a chips.
You don't put like syrup on them or anything?
Syrup. What the fuck? What snack have you ever opened where you're like, you have to when put condiments on it?
When I think of waffle, when you think of waffles, don't you think about like putting something on it?
My thought is if whatever you thought about putting on it, they baked it into the snack. All right. Now, let's see what we got here. How is it?
Dry. Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. I'll eat the box because you know me. That's what I do.
Okay.
Right? You know what they taste like? What do they taste like that we grew up on?
Graham crackers.
Yeah. Oh, what were the cookies? Animal crackers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly what they taste like.
I mean, I'm with you. I could eat the whole box. No problem. But my concern here when it comes to snacks and food, which I don't see in the schools, I don't see in the hospitals, and forgive me again if we talked about this. Nutrition is something that I don't see a lot of doctors promoting.
Right.
Like good diet. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think this is in medical school.
Yeah, we're not trained well in nutrition, I have to be honest with you.
So, which I find fascinating,
right,
due to the fact that nutrition is probably the result of a lot of disease.
100%. And what we learn early on, definitely those habits translate to adulthood, right? So
yeah.
Getting it early.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you get something like this. Anytime I see this, cocoa melon, waffles. I just see not healthy.
Yeah.
It's just a filler for the kid.
Okay.
I would rather go, and I'm guilty of this. I'm not right. saying that we're practicing this at the house.
Right.
I would rather see the kid eat a strawberry, an apple,
sure.
a banana.
Sure. Right?
But what is it with this stuff? Is it just so convenient you throw it in the car?
It's so convenient. I mean, everything is on the go nowadays. It's a quick snack. You know, it's really hard. To your point, I mean, I wish I knew more. You know, we'll have a nutritionist, like a pediatric nutritionist on the show. I don't do this with my kids. I don't do this with myself. I have a hard time looking at labels and truly knowing what does that mean. 80 calories, is that good? Is that bad? Seems fine. You know, carbohydrates, 10 grams, okay. Low sugar, great. But like the actual numbers, I mean, does the quantification of it really make that much of a difference one way or the other within a couple points? That's always my question. Because I don't think anybody, even the most well-intentioned parent, you can't read labels. You don't do it for yourself. How do you do that?
But there are people out there, and I follow these people on Instagram. Yeah. I see them every once in a while. They come on the screen,
yeah.
and they're like, hey, are you drinking, water in plastic bottles? That's awful because there's BPA in the, right. It's everything. It seems like you can't eat anything anymore without it being a problem.
That's the issue. I feel like today there's a problem with X that next week there won't be a problem. I mean, I read it all the time. 3 cups of coffee today protects me against everything. Next week I read 3 cups of coffee, I die of a heart attack next week.
Yeah, yeah.
It constantly changes. And that's why I wonder, in the mild variations, does it really make a difference? Because I think the overall theme, at least as a pediatrician and a parent, when it comes to kids, is moderation, right? That's why, yeah, if you want to give this as a snack, great. Look, I'm sitting here eating it. I'll eat it. I'll finish this one. I'll have another one. It's easy. Are there other substitutes that would be better? I was sitting here eating an apple with you. Sure. But I think as long as that's not all you're eating and you're eating other things in moderation and you're having a variety and a well-balanced diet, I mean, I think that's really what we should be teaching. Because I think keeping up with the numbers and the label reading is just very difficult. Unless it's common sense. If it's all sugar, yeah, you know it's not good. You're not going to have gummy bears every day. I love gummy bears.
Yeah, I love gummy bears too. But, you know, they're saying there's a movement out there that, you know, they're getting kids addicted to sugar early on.
Yeah.
And then that when they taste other things, they're like, wow, this doesn't taste like the waffles I had earlier because there's no sugar in it. So, I mean, do you completely eliminate sugar from a child's diet from the get-go?
I don't think you completely eliminate anything, because my feeling is that when you eliminate something 100%, that person seeks those things out to their detriment, right? I see this all the time. My child's never allowed to have TV. Well, when they get exposed to their friend's house and has a TV, who do you think which kid is standing 5 feet from the TV staring at it and won't go away? Child who can never have sugar the second they get it, right? Hand over fist in their mouth. And we see this when you abstain from anything in life. I think we see this with alcohol and cigarettes. I mean, there's that argument, right? Europe versus the US, that in Europe, you know, they have small amounts of alcohol and it's just like, you know, with a glass of wine with meals, then you're not binging it. Where we say, absolutely, you can never have it. And then people seek it out and binge it. I think that goes across the board with lots of things. So I think that's the key. I don't think it's zero. I think it's moderation. And finding that balance, because yeah, high levels of sugar aren't good, not just for nutrition, but how we think, right? Like kids thinking during school, behavior. Oh, yeah. We know, we've talked about this, fluctuations in normal sugar levels are one of the main reasons kids have like tantrums and behavioral issues, headaches. And it's not that if I measured their sugar, it'd be abnormally high or low at any point. It's just that normal fluctuations. they're carb loaded diets constantly, right? Everybody's cereal for breakfast. They don't eat anything or drink well during school, right? The second they can run and play, they run and play. And then they bottom out when they come home with us, when they don't get their way, it's a 50-50 shot. They're on the floor, speaking from experience, you know, having an exorcist. So we talk about actually high protein snacks being very helpful because it keeps you euglycemic. It keeps your sugar flatline. So not just having the carb in the morning, but having something with protein, an egg, a yogurt, milk, and then that first afternoon snack after school, carrying something that has protein, you know, peanut butter, a cheese stick, you know, something like that, because it just, it helps mood as well, which we see.
The rating here on waffles, convenient, on the go, need something to throw in the kid's mouth, fine. Again, I'm looking for alternatives when it's come when it comes to for snacks for kids. Fruits, vegetables, carrot sticks, celery. I know they're not sexy. I know they don't taste abundantly fantastic, but
what about putting this on a plate, a couple apple slices, a little honey?
I guarantee they're going to eat the waffles. And then the apple's going to go, and then they're going to say I'm full when they get to the apples. So yeah, it's what do we start a shit? What do we do on lollipops? Mm. I give it three out of five lollipops. What's your rating?
Yeah, I agree. I think
3 out of 5.
Yeah, three and a half out of five for what do you call them? Wallsies?
Waffles. Get yourself some waffles in your kid's stomach today. That's our time here on Daddy versus Doctor. Gotta ask you subscribe to the channel. Go to our Instagram, Facebook. Like us there. Any topics that you want us to discuss, any snacks that you like that you want us to try, please leave them in the comments, and we'll definitely effort to get those on the show. My name is Sebastian Mascalco, Dr. Scott Cohen. We will see you next week.
The opinions expressed in this program are not intended as professional medical advice, as a diagnosis, as a treatment protocol, or as a substitute for professional medical advice from your physician. Please consider your own medical history and consult with your own physician for your specific healthcare and/or medical needs, and about your concerns for yourself and your family.